Hello, listeners. I'm Logan McLean, and this is OJT, On the Job Training, the Deadlines Edition. This is the second episode of my experiment with OJT Deadlines. As many listeners now know, I've started a full-time job at The Guardian, PEI's daily newspaper. So, while I'm still planning to release some Deadlines episodes in the coming months, weekly OJT is not going to be permanent. Not yet. For now, though, enjoy this episode where we listen to some new music, shout out some more heroes of 2020, and discover a new species before meeting some leaders of the Camp Buraha Writing Workshop. Declan Rockwell is a 17-year-old singer-songwriter based in Summerside, PEI. He's been playing music most of his life, but his artistic career was nearly left on pause when he ran into difficulties at home while in elementary school.
The third grade, I got mixed up into some troubles, and we were put into foster care because of my father's alcoholism and stuff like that. So we moved all over the island and stuff.
Today, Declan is waiting for the finishing touches on his recently recorded EP, Isolation. It's his first record, and it's inspired by the pandemic. His house in downtown Summerside is small, right across the street from the arena. He lives there with his father and younger brother. The fridge in the kitchen hums, off and on, and he has the same little wooden shelf students at the local high school have made in shop class for a decade or more. But he had a difficult path getting back to his home and back to music. At 11 and in foster care, he started hanging out with older kids who were using drugs.
I didn't take a break from music. I fell into this deep depression. And I did not want to play music anymore. I wanted to get involved with the wrong people. I wanted to look cool. And I wanted to feel like I mattered to people who thought that themselves didn't matter. So it was easy for me to impress them.
He tried cannabis a few times and was tempted by harder drugs, but he mostly stayed clean. He watched his friends getting arrested. He watched them overdose, unable to help. And he watched them die. After 4 years, things turned around when his dad got sober and went to court to get his kids back.
Turn me back on music. We won the foster care court date in 2016. And I started going back to the Boys and Girls Club, which is down the street from my house, and they built a music room, and I was like, sick, I want to play the guitar, because you can get all the chicks if you play the guitar. So I picked up this acoustic guitar at the Youth Engagement Center, and it's still there to this day, and it was this out-of-tune guitar, and it was in that room where I learned that, you know, you can sound like garbage.
So when the night calls and I'm alone with my thoughts, I need a doctor, Fraser Crane.
Rockwell swears a lot for a Christian, but he points to God as the thing that saved him from the wrong path. These days he's pretty involved with the church and sometimes does public speaking about the challenges he's faced. With his first EP coming out soon, Rockwell doesn't know what to expect.
I'll go with whoever listens to it, right? So if I get one listener, that's one more than most people who want to put out music but can't, you know? Or, you know, think that I'm terrible, but they can't judge somebody if they haven't tried it themselves, right? Because it's been a journey with my music, man.
And that journey has Declan Rockwell back at home, back with his father. Next year, though, he's going to be in Belgium, if the pandemic allows. He's supposed to be there now on a Rotary Club exchange trip, but COVID stopped it. Still, he seems optimistic, like he knows what it means to have a second chance, and then a third. Logan McLean, Holland College Journalism and Communications.
Took me way behind the promised land. We build all these bridges just to watch them burn. We stand in...
Logan McLean, Holland College Journalism and Communications. Appeal results in 6 carloads of items and $5,000 donated for unhoused islanders. December 23rd, 2020. Originally published by The Guardian. Charlottetown, PEI. Courtney Crosby doesn't always feel people are listening when she raises issues of poverty, addictions, and mental health. However, she certainly felt like her appeal for help was heard on the weekend. Spurred by the city of Charlottetown's decision to close over a culvert used as a shelter by unhoused people, she raised money and collected items this week. Saturday, she and fellow volunteers set up near the site in Charlottetown, raising over $5,000 for clients of the Community Outreach Center. It was a beautiful feeling all around, like being on the giving end of it and the receiving end of it and just seeing the joy on people's faces, she said. Crosby is in recovery and advocates for people struggling with mental illness and addictions issues. She says she sometimes wonders if her message is failing to land. Sometimes I use my voice and I feel ignored by the people who I feel that I need to be heard by. This time, things were different, she said. Crosby announced the initiative last week on her social media, and people contacted her immediately about helping. Jennifer Platts Fanning was one of them. In past years, she and her children gave out things like socks and gloves in December, she said, but she wasn't aware of the culvert. It was in the news that it had been sealed up by the city, and that's when I knew that I had to do something more substantial, Platts Fanning said. It was enough to keep me up at night. She posted about collecting donations on social media. About 50 people responded right away. I was surprised at how many people reached out to me, especially that the vast majority of these people were strangers. While still working full-time, she spent what extra time she had gathering items, she said. I drove around collecting curbside donations from generous Islanders. By Tuesday, her car was full and had to be unloaded at the Community Outreach Center in Charlottetown. Thursday, she did it all over again. Saturday, at the culvert, it was filled again. Twice. It took 30 minutes for an assembly line of 15 volunteers to finally get everything unloaded at the outreach center. By the end of the week, I was no longer shocked by how much people were willing to donate, Platts Fanning said. It's definitely an attribute of the island, a willingness to give. Another resource needed for addictions and housing issues is a safe injection site, said Kara Ross, one of the campaign's volunteers. It provides people a space where, if they are going to use, they are not by themselves, she said. Ross is in recovery too, having spent 5 years on the streets in Alberta and BC. Now, back on her feet, she was one of this week's biggest donors. Safe injection sites provide things like clean needles, condoms, access to health professionals, and resources for those looking to get clean, she said. They also prevent and treat overdoses, according to the Canadian Center on Substance Use and Addiction. People can't get clean if they're dead, Ross said. I am only alive because of Narcan. I was Narcan twice. One of them was in a safe injection site. Narcan, nasal spray naloxone, is a temporary antidote for opioid overdoses that allows patients time to be taken to a hospital. Platts Fanning also supports safe injection resources, noting the tools they offer for harm reduction. There's also social workers there, so if somebody wants to talk about trying to deal with their addiction issues, there's somebody on site, she said. Crosby agrees with her fellow volunteers, though she sees obstacles to safe injection sites. There's a lot of stigma around that, she said. People think it enables and supports drug use. But if people could get educated enough and read the research and see the facts on what other provinces went ahead and done this, they would quickly learn that that is the opposite of what it does. PEI has had 12 reported opioid overdoses since January. 9 involved fentanyl. 4 people died. Heroes of 2020. Betty Begg shares love of community through gifts from the heart. December 31st, 2020. Originally published by The Guardian. Charlottetown, PEI. Betty Begg Brooks knew she was onto something on a cold, stormy February day when 101 families showed up for help. She'd been working at the Salvation Army and Family Services. When the charity decided to limit their donations to food, Begg Brooks decided to handle clothing and other donations out of her car. She hosted an open house, or care fair, in her home, and that's when all the families started showing up. Today, Begg Brooks runs Gifts from the Heart, a one-stop free store for struggling Islanders. The store is preparing its Christmas Love donation boxes for the holidays. The charity remained open all through the pandemic, never reducing hours or limiting its services, she said. When COVID-19 hit, we had a 150% increase for our clientele. Unlike a food bank, where clients can only get food and necessities once a month, Gifts from the Heart offers things like furniture on a bi-weekly basis and necessities as needed. Nobody is turned away, she said. These people are rejected every day, and they're not going to be rejected at Gifts from the Heart. The organization is entirely run by volunteers, with 78 people working regularly. Together, they help 852 families, a total of 3,000 people. Everything comes from the heart, Beg Brooks said. It comes from the tip to the tip of the island. Help comes from all over the province, in part because of Gift's reputation and consistency, she said. It comes from just the ordinary folks. A lot of people have touched us and believe in what me and my volunteers do. With so much of the island experiencing problems like food insecurity, the work is all done without expecting anything in return, she said. We're expecting people to help because everybody should help with poverty. Beg Brooks has been at this a long time, visiting orphanages and prisons since the 1960s. I started in 1967, and I would search for people who were down and out and try to meet their needs. She worked in orphanages in Germany and the prison in Kingston, Ontario. I've always been drawn to places like this, she said. It's somebody's son, somebody's daughter. As a single mother of four children, Beg Brooks had personal experience with needing help, she said. The first time that somebody suggested I should go to a food bank, well, to me, that was really hard. And the way it made me feel was terrible. When Beg Brooks started Gifts from the Heart, she ran it out of her car after time spent working with the Salvation Army and hosting a care fair. When the 101 families showed up, she knew she had to find a larger location. She talked to some people, including staff at the farm center. Betty, we'll give you the farm center if you want to do it bigger, they told her, an offer she couldn't refuse. Gifts from the Heart has been going ever since. Today, it operates at 58 Spring Lane in Charlottetown. The provincial government covers the rent, but Gifts pays overhead costs through donations, Beg Brooks said. With her client list always growing, Beg Brooks hopes to double her storage capacity with a 10,000 square foot location and to purchase a new van, she said. I've got to keep the faith and realize that it will happen, because you can't help this many people and it not happen. Eastern red bat discovered in PEI, November 26th, 2020. Originally published by The Guardian. Charlottetown, PEI. Yordi Seegers couldn't be sure what the data was saying. At least, not for the first 6 years his team looked. But the eastern red bat was there in the PEI National Park, and this year, there was enough information to be certain. And it wasn't just this year. Backtracking to the start of the project, he found the eastern red was there every year. The park's resource conservation team has been working with the Canadian Wildlife Health Cooperative monitoring parks and wetlands for wildlife like bats and birds. Bats are a key part of this, and the team collected audio recordings of their movement on PEI. Seegers had been flagging the call of an unknown bat for 5 years, but didn't have enough to be sure. Until now. That was pretty exciting, even though it's not necessarily surprising, because the eastern red bat is a migratory species. So it flies large distances in the spring and the summer to go up north, he said. Because it moves so much, it's more likely to pass a place like PEI regularly, he said. A fungal disease called white nose syndrome has killed 90% of the bats that roost on PEI. This is why the CWHC and parks have been monitoring populations. Each year, Seegers has to comb through 100,000 files. Each time a bat passes one of the CWHC's devices in the park, it is recorded. One recording means one pass, but not always a different bat, he said. It could be one bat flying by 1,000 times, 1,000 bats flying by one time, or, more likely, somewhere in between there. He didn't notice the eastern red in the mass of data, he said, and is now using a program called a sonogram to identify them. This slows down and lowers the pitch of the sounds bats make while flying to locate themselves in space. The sounds are normally too high and fast for humans to hear. Perhaps most importantly for identifying species, the sonogram creates a computer image of the sound wave. Based on the shape of this graph, we can match culls, Seegers said. While the eastern red is not endangered, its presence is still important, said CWHC technician Tessa McBurney. All species have different roles. Bats on PEI don't eat fruit or blood and are actually helpful for agriculture. Pest management is what they're mostly responsible for, she said. They're all important for disease management. Knowing what's in an ecosystem can help prevent problems in the future, she said. Catch trends early, take measures. Finding the eastern red bat is a testament to long-term monitoring, said project lead Kim Gamble. The more you do it, the more you could pick up on things. Gamble is encouraged by raised awareness of bats at risk on PEI. I'm hearing more and more that different groups are starting to do bat monitoring, she said. The more we learn, the more groups doing things like this, we can make sure we have protection. The eastern red bat was also found this year on a property owned by the PEI Native Council. The council hopes to turn that location in St. Chrysostom into a wildlife preserve. Writing Workshop empowers young Black, Indigenous, and girls of color. December 3rd, 2020. Charlottetown, PEI. Joss Raome didn't have anything like this as a kid in Massachusetts. They never would have thought of it. As an adult, though, Raome is helping the next generation of Black, Indigenous, and girls of color find their voice. Raome is a singer-songwriter and one of the instructors for the Camp Furaha writing workshop for BIPOC girls ages 9 to 15 in Charlottetown. Raome uses they-them pronouns. Looking back now, they see how the workshop could have helped while growing up. I think it really would have changed a lot of perspectives in my life, Raome said. It teaches the kids how to respect themselves and how to love themselves and gives them access to things they may not have at home. Young people are too often told to sit down and be quiet, they said. Now is the time to not be quiet. It's the time to be loud and voice your thoughts and get opinions and be challenged. The years between 9 and 15 are especially difficult, they said. Basically, anything bad that happens feels like the end of the world. Writing gives girls the tools to communicate their own ideas more effectively, Raome said. This is particularly important for Black, Indigenous, and girls of color, they said. Not only are they going through the regular stress of being a child, like going through puberty and trying to figure out who they are, they have this whole world filled with people who are against them. It's kind of letting them know, it's okay to be me. Music is the main medium the camp is working with, Raome said. No matter what your background is, most people can connect with music. Organizer Claire Byrne grew up in Charlottetown, and she didn't have this kind of experience either. The group's goal is to create a space where kids don't feel alone, she said. They might be the only youth of color in their school or their class, but at least they know that they have community that they can look back to and just be like, okay, once a week, I'm going to be hanging out with my people. The writing workshop is an extension of the Camp Furaha program that began in the summer, with funding from the Sierra Club's Wild Child program and PEI's Interministerial Women's Secretariat. The plan for the camp came from a women's luncheon during Black History Month, Byrne said. Those involved wanted to share the sense of community they'd felt with young people who may feel alone. As the writing workshop developed, Byrne discussed the benefits for the kids of things like songwriting and rapping with Raome and the other instructor, Daniel Butterfield. I like to look to music and songwriting as a means to figure out life, said Butterfield, whose stage and rap name is Vince the Messenger. When I was a kid, I found writing really helpful to process what was going on in my mind. While Butterfield doesn't have much experience teaching, he's learning as he goes and looking for feedback from the campers. I'm still working out some of the things I want to teach the kids, he said. He hopes to be someone they can look to with questions or for mentorship if they want to take songwriting more seriously. For the first session, Butterfield started off with a basic rhyming exercise, just to get the mind in the habit of finding rhymes in that manner, he said. Once you have your mind a little bit accustomed to finding rhymes quickly, you can just make that process a little bit more simple. Butterfield hopes to have each participant write a verse from start to finish that they can then perform, if they feel comfortable, he said. And that all starts with the right environment. You can't really force anyone to write when they're uncomfortable, he said. The name of the camp comes from the Swahili word for joy. And that seems to fit with Rayom's impression of the response. They're having a blast. It's so great to see them having a good time. And that's it for the second OJT Deadlines. Follow this podcast on Instagram at OJT_podcast and on Twitter at OJT Podcast. The Facebook page is OJT On The Job Training. Follow me on Instagram at Logan.McLean.75 and on Twitter at LoganMcLean94. And finally, listeners, please check out my website, OJTpod.ca, for more written stories like you heard today, past episodes, and progress reports. The podcast is available there and on all major streaming platforms. Please rate, subscribe, and review. Everything helps when getting a podcast off the ground. And if you like this show and want more interesting guests, listener feedback is the best way to help me reach new people and make that happen. This has been OJT, On The Job Training, the Deadlines Edition. I'm Logan McLean. Thank you for listening.